We're just 1 minute out from getting reconvening here, so. We'll do for a quick 1 minute. We're going to reconvene. This is the land use hearing, Monday, January 30th, 2017. It is 1 p.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners reconvening for that hearing. I want to thank those people who stuck around for the second half of this meeting and providing testimony. I think the morning half, in my opinion, went as good as it possibly could have on an emotional issue. And just talking about a little bit of the history and taking it slow, when Measure 97, 91 passed in the state, we were the first county in the state to convene kind of like a task force. We had some people from the Association of Oregon Counties who helped draft the legislation, or draft the subsequent legislation, but were subject matter experts on it, and I helped host that right here in Josephine County, right in this room. And so we've been talking about it for quite some time. I grew up in the Illinois Valley, born and raised out there. My family's been on a piece of property since 58, and the marijuana issue has been around for quite a while in one form or another. I think back in the day, it was more regulated to the back part of somebody's property, probably in a barn or even underground, as somebody was talking about. It didn't come to the forefront with some of the neighboring issues that we have today, really, until it became legal. People will talk about whether or not, you know, it's one way or the other way. Measure 91 didn't pass Josephine County. We haven't had a marijuana-focused piece of legislation pass in Josephine County, but it was really close. It was two votes shy. It was 17,313 people voted against it. 17,311 people voted for it. So to give policymakers like us a real clear direction on it, we really don't have one, other than the fact that that 3% retail tax measure did pass in Josephine County, which we expected it to do. So I think a lot of people, when you talk to them, they were more okay with it if there was going to be adequate regulations around it. And I think that's even what the feds are looking for from a state perspective, state by state. Sure, you can do it, but you got to regulate it in a decent way. And I think when Josephine County is looking at the state to come in here and do things, or having set things up, they often don't address the rural issues as much as they probably adequately address the urban issues, which is no surprise, and that's what we've found throughout history. They don't do an adequate job, because there really isn't quite the representation at the state level. So I didn't want to interrupt people's testimonies, but I did want to kind of provide some of where I'm coming from on this. I think we're just trying to do the best we can with a situation that was somewhat dumped in our lap, and regardless of whether or not it's one person or 100 or 5,000, there are issues that affect people's, you know, property rights here, both sides, and that's the whole basis for land use, in my understanding of how it goes back, is to mitigate challenges between neighbors and their use. So that's what we're doing here, and we do have the authority and I think the responsibility to try to figure out the best possible way to move this forward under the confines of the state and federal law. So we'll continue with testimony. Again, if you were not here in the beginning, this is your opportunity to provide comments on Ms. Schmelzer's proposal for a text amendment addressing various issues. And you'll be able to do that in 5 minutes of time. Please just state your name and general locale of where you reside. We don't need specific street addresses, but you feel free to give one if you want to. And because there's so few people here, I think we'll just start over on the right side of the room, and we'll move our way over to the left and hopefully get everybody before we bring it back to the board. That's the process. So right over here, if you don't mind.
Well, I really wasn't planning on talking today, but actually you guys have the duty to, you know, take care of your citizens that were actually born here in Josephine County and Oregon. Okay, Nigel Horesca. I live in Selma. I went to school with you too, sir.
Yeah,
okay, Wally needs to check into the fact that we have the fishing and the game licenses. People come here and pay an out-of-state residency to fish, and out-of-state growers need to pay some kind of extra tax, period. 10-year residency, period. you have to secure the growers that are here, that are born here, that are actually poor, rather than letting these rich folks come here and make the move, because this is a game of chess, and they're winning the battle of the game of chess right now. We cannot allow it. We have to stand up, fight the tweakers that are growing, straight up fight them if we have to. That's where we're at. I talk to the community in whole. I know most, if not 90% of the growers out there, and they're pissed. They are pissed. You got people like Sandy Diesel bringing people in to grow here. This is our town. We have to stand up for it. I didn't want to talk to you guys personally, but there is a point where we have property rights as property owners. Some of us have old farms. I take care of my parents. They're getting older. They have old farm equipment laying around. God forbid one of you guys come here and tell us that we got to take that out. If that, you know, I watch American Pickers, and there's a lot of people that have trash in their yards. And another man's trash is another man's treasure, correct? So, you know, I heard you talk about your GTO, but we're not talking about GTOs. We're talking about shit nests of people. The things that are going on here are terrible. And excuse me, I'm sorry for my language, you know. But we do got to try a little harder. And as men in this community, we do got to stand up. You need to get out on the streets, deal with the heroin problem. Our kids are getting screwed over by this heroin problem. I've had enough of it, personally. You know, I'm willing to risk my life for this deal, to put this community first. I'd even quit growing to get this damn drugs out of our streets. And that is our duty as citizens of America. We do, I hate to say it, we need to try to make America great again. And it comes to us, you and me, manning up and not being big old weenies and being afraid of the tweakers. It's time to stand up and be men. Thank you very much.
Anyone else over here?
I'm Kevin McCabe. I'm my property is zoned rural residential in the Robertson Bridge area. I'm a member of the Sun Grown Growers Guild, and Pete and some of those other comments, I'd like to say they talk for me and a lot of other people. When I read the proposed legislation, I found some holes that I'd like to address. Specifically, when I was researching what I want to do on my property, specifically greenhouses, they are going, in that legislation, require a charcoal filter system that is going to be engineered. And so I started going through catalogs, trying to figure out, you know, what I'm going to have to be putting into my greenhouse to comply with these regulations. And I brought a FarmTech catalog to give you guys, because FarmTech doesn't have any charcoal filters available, one of the largest greenhouse suppliers in the nation. I'm assuming you're talking, or whoever wrote this is talking about these charcoal filters that they use for indoor growing. And when my research, the largest one I could find, there's two companies. One is called Can, the other is called Fat Filter with a PH. And a 14-inch around by 48-inch tall, weighs over 100 pounds. It's available, CFM, cubic feet per minute, is 1,250, and in a greenhouse situation, you want to exhaust the air every 3 minutes, so the cubic feet that one of those filters will do is equivalent to a 20 by 20 greenhouse 10 feet tall. The expense on that will turn a greenhouse that size from less than $1,000 into, my estimate is at least $5,000, because you're going to be putting electricity in. The way that we usually vent those is we just roll up the sides and open up the top, let nature vent it out. So a $1,000 greenhouse is now going to be $5,000 to $7,000, and is about the size of maybe 4 to 6 plants. So if we're talking about doing a 48 plant greenhouse or something, just the size of a medical operation, not even a rec operation yet, we're talking $60,000 or something ridiculous, and we're going to have a dozen of these 100-pound filters. So I think that this has gone a little overboard in what is reasonable for the smell ordinance with greenhouses. The other issue that wasn't brought up in this legislation is that a vegging plant that doesn't have flowers has a minute amount of aroma compared to the flowering plant. And the state has gone through to distinguish the difference between a flowering plant and a vegging plant. This legislation for the county doesn't do that. So I would be required to put in a charcoal filter system for my vegging plants that don't even have an aroma. So I don't think that this has been thought out well enough to pass, specifically on the smell ordinance when it has to do with greenhouses. A little about me. My intention is to do completely organic. I won't even bring in any toxic chemicals, even if they are allowed with organic. I'm the one that sprays. I don't want to spray anything that says I have to use a respirator or a bodysuit. I'm not going to use that stuff. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to bring it around my house. I would like to be able to get the system down to where I could show an example of how to do this without toxic chemicals. That's where I would like to go with that, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Hunker.
Good afternoon. Bill Hunker, Merlin, Oregon. It feels a little deja vu from 4 years ago. And 4 years ago, and you guys are probably weren't paying attention to the details at that point, we had claims, credible claims, that there were 300 problems with complaints. And after $500 by Jack Swift, they found out there were six. You're fighting today that lack of trust and transparency from 4 years ago. When I hear today 10 times mentioned that there's a lot, that doesn't give me confidence. If you can't count it, or as they say, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. I would like to see the spreadsheet for the complaints. I'd like to see the addresses or the names, whatever you have, that came in, then across the top say what the issue was. Because a lot, we heard that 4 years ago, and I think that was partly to do with an 80-20 split that they got on the vote. So if you're in the instance of transparency, if that's what you're working with and that's the reason we're doing all this, I think it should be available to the public. Let's see a listing. I don't care about what the person complained was, but if it was odor or water or whatever. So we really have a breakdown of what kind of critical problem we're having. The word on the street is that there's one person who accounts for at least 40 to 45 complaints just in that one person. So is that truly 45 complaints, or is that a person 45 times coming in and you're counting that? I don't see a reason in transparency why we can't have a spreadsheet. If you don't have time to do it, I'm big on spreadsheets. Be glad to take your paperwork and transfer it to a spreadsheet so that the public can see what are the complaints, what's driving this whole thing. I want to give a nod to Bob Hart. I think that in particular, any setbacks of fencing is going to cause problems down the road, and we know already what it costs to take care of a line that is off. Just the time and effort and what you have to do. And people moving and as they do are going to come in for 20 years from now, and you're going to have line after line after line. Oh, I thought that was your fence. I thought, you know, this setback, and I didn't hear it today, so maybe that left, or maybe it was just not covered, but there was going to be a setback for fencing from the actual property line. And the whole idea of fencing is for property lines. Now, setback from the main road like you do with all the gates and so forth, I totally understand that. That's the other thing. The thing I am unclear on, today it was mentioned, that the hearings officer is not involved in what we're really talking about. We're doing a planning and land use, and I hear all of the hearings officer material brought up today, and yet at the end, we're not talking about a hearings officer today. That's going to be at another time. I was never clear on that, and I would still like some clarity on what are we really dealing with. All in all, I was at the Halloween function where they were trying very hard to push this through, and had it been pushed through then with all of the views that we're having backward and saying, oh, we need to relook at this and relook at that, they were very willing to push that through that night. And I think that this, it behooves you guys to slowly go through this and say, where are we? What are the real issues that we're dealing with here? Because this is a real everything but the kitchen sink kind of text amendment, and it needs to be broken out. Many people have talked about that. But I think if it's true that there's been talk of a marijuana group that you could talk to and confer with, I think we have some experts in the county, and I think that is something that should be a part of this. I'm feeling that it's been very easy to put on the marijuana bandwagon the fact that we need code enforcement for the whole county. And it was kind of a way to say, oh, let's just shove the old enforcement through because we'll ride on the back of marijuana. They may be two separate issues, they may be the same issue, but I do agree that very small people of bad players usually cause the problems.
Hi, my name is Brenda Thomas. I'm with Southern Oregon Patient Awareness Center.
Can you repeat your first name?
Brenda Thomas, yes. I'm actually from Wilderville, and luckily none of this applies to me because I have over 2.5 acres. I live just on the other side of the county lines, city, county. So I'm here, honestly, just to speak for patients that I've discussed with. I help patients in the area get their medical marijuana cards. I'm pro-medical. I'm not anti-rec, but I'm not pro-rec either. I agree with you guys on a lot of the nuisance, the way too many campers, lack of sewer. That's, you know, as a property owner, that's just normal code for how to be a good neighbor. My one concern, honestly, is the 2.5 acre mark. I have patients that when you guys set the laws that they could not grow outdoor in city limits, moved just outside city limits into about 1 acre properties so they could grow outdoors again. And now here we go again with more limitations that are going to force them to move again. And I know it's putting a huge financial burden on quite a few of my patients. I know a lot of this doesn't apply to medical because medical has its own set of rules. I do want to make sure that when you're writing these, you specifically state medical, recreational, commercial, non-commercial. We have a lot of confusion with the medical between the commercial and non-commercial. In the legislative session coming up in February, we have 5 months of legislature. We are very excited about that. We hope to get a lot of work done this legislature. But they are also talking about switching the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program into its own cannabis commission, which I fully support. I plan on being behind that 100%. I also plan on applying for a position on the committee for clinical guidelines. So anytime you guys want to talk to me or get my opinion on anything, I'm more than willing to sit and chat with you at my office. You guys all know how to get a hold of me. But that was my one main concern, was the 1 acre thing, especially outside city limits. I spoke to Brent Kenyon of Southern Oregon Alternative Medicine. He's also on the Liquor Commission board, and he stated to me that Kelly at the Liquor Commission is going to let micro canopies under 5,000 feet through without any land use information necessary. So I don't know if you may want to take that into consideration when you're writing these as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, gentleman in the hat.
Hey, I'm Indigo. I'm from Williams. So I want to start off. I'm in support, you know, with Pioneer Pete and this gentleman. But at the same time, you know, I'm from Colorado, and I do think what this guy is talking about is a genius idea, that the 10 years, you know, having to be a resident before you can have a farm. So whether you like it or not, people are moving here, and they're retiring here to grow cannabis. Just like in Colorado, you know, I was forced out of Colorado basically because the cost of living increase and excessive regulations due to the cannabis industry. Unlike Colorado, most people here I've found do grow organic, and they actually do take pretty good care of the land overall. I understand there's always outliers who, you know, are going to, you know, have issues, but I do believe that there's a better way for the community to educate these people and on these matters instead of adding more regulation. It sounds like most people's issues here today are with a few particular residences, and thankfully I don't live around any of these. I was taken in to Williams by a very kind family, I moved out here because of the excessive regulations, and they have, you know, one of these encampments, and it's well maintained. There's not sewage problems, or not anything like that, you know, and they do it responsibly. I think there's a way to do things responsibly, and then there's, you know, the other, and I think people need to be basically educated as to these matters. If it weren't for these so-called compounds, I would be homeless at this current time. The cost of living in Colorado, it went up $600 for the apartment I had, you know, within 2 years. And I know housing shortages are happening in every state where it's legal. And this is a major issue that is affecting my generation. And I don't see many people here of my generation speaking. But there are a lot of homeless people. A lot of my friends were forced out of Colorado, and the ones that didn't, a lot of them are living on the streets now. So it is a dangerous situation, especially when you have snowstorms like we had, you know, a couple weeks back, where you have people that could potentially be dying because they don't have some sort of place to stay. I personally believe that the encampments are a safer situation. And, you know, my next point is, if you overregulate these things, you're going to push all of this to the untaxed market. And what you're going to get out of that is people who are avoiding regulations and instead starting up meth labs and other things like that in order to still make the income but avoid the regulation. So I think, in end, you're causing yourselves more issues than not by adding these regulations. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Anyone else over in this general locale? Yes.
My name is Lavender. I'm also from Williams. My main focus is education over regulation. I ditto to Indigo because he said a lot of good points for that. Those who don't follow regulation now more than likely won't follow new regulations to come. And I understand that enforcement of current regulations is an issue, and that's something that is a part of this new code. And my main concern is, of course, the compounds that people... I understand that those who have the ability to afford a particular lifestyle that is not of the lifestyle that they complain about in regards to these compounds, they don't seem to perhaps have any empathy or sympathy for those who simply, like my generation, don't have the privilege to really remove themselves from those situations. I understand cleanliness is an issue, and that's why I believe education is far more important, because yes, you can enforce all that you want, but if you're putting people out, especially out on the streets, what does that really get you besides more harm? And harm reduction is something that I'm in full support of. And it's not just about harm reduction in terms of cannabis use or harm reduction in terms of the heroin issue, which is really caused by opioid addiction and the cost of prescriptions. My main focus is just harm reduction in general and what we can do for the community as a whole and not for the few who have these issues. So I myself don't know what the most realistic solution is, to these compounds, but perhaps educating these people on the codes that are already current, the housing codes that are already current, and the different facilities and services that are available to them that they can utilize, so that way they aren't imposing upon their neighbors. That's just about all I have to really say, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else over here on this side? You guys interested? Yeah. Yeah, feel free. Sure, absolutely, no problem. Anyone else on this side? Yes. We'll go second row, or the second right behind. Yeah, right behind you. Whatever, one of you guys, you're both. You guys work it out, sorry. Let Green go first.
Thank you very much for giving me this time. My name is Amber Friedman, and I live in the Murphy Creek area. And today I'd like to talk specifically about the property at 910 Murphy Creek. I do have a lot of sympathy for the other folks that were here from Murphy in the 300 block area. We're dealing with kind of the same situation. If you do have a compound situation and you respect yourself and respect your surroundings, that's one thing. But the situation I'm talking about is not anything like that at all. The property at 910 has the remains of a mobile home that burned down this past spring. The property has no water or sewer facilities and has been the site of a large marijuana grow for the past 4 years. They have 80, 90 planter boxes, 4x4 planter boxes, on this 1.9-acre parcel. The mobile home hadn't been habitable for at least 6 years before the marijuana grow came in. And there's 50 feet of the hazardous material left over from the mobile home, along with all of the things from the growing of the marijuana, the planter boxes and such. And it all sits along the edge of Murphy Creek. The 2014 Oregon Structural Specialty Code, or I'll refer to as the ORC here going forward, section 1804.4 states, grading and fill in flood hazardous areas shall be approved by the floodplain administrator. This is in what FEMA has determined to be a flood zone area, flood zone A. My husband Richard, who is already up here, has given you the FEMA maps and other photos that I'm going to refer to just briefly. So if you could just know that you have that FEMA map. If the ORC is concerned about fill material in a floodplain zone, that should it not equally be concerned about the hazardous materials left over from this burnt out trailer in that same zone, along with all of the trash and remnants that remain there? The last few years, there's been two camp trailers located on the property that I myself wouldn't consider to be inhabitable. During the growing season, a third camp trailer is used. Oregon Statute Section 446.3110 defines a camping trailer as either a vacation trailer or a self-propelled vehicle equipped with wheels for highway use, and that is intended for human occupancy and is being used for vacation or recreational purposes, but not for recreation, but not for residential purpose. It is equipped with plumbing, a sink, or a toilet. These camp trailers are not plumbed with anything. ORC Section 446.125, occupancy on private land. A person may occupy a manufactured dwelling of a camping vehicle on private land if the person complies with all applicable standards of sanitation, water, plumbing, electrical, sewage, installations prescribed by law or the state or the rules issued thereunder by local authorities. Referencing the ORC Section 446.330 rules, the rules shall pertain but not be restricted to water supply, final sewage disposal, surface drainage maintenance, insect and rodent control, garbage disposal, designation and maintenance of a camping space, and the cleanliness of the premises, Again, there is hazardous waste material and trash scattered throughout the site. You have the photographs. This property owner has no pride of ownership, does not follow or abide by the laws, and has no respect for other neighbors. Please enforce the codes and have these hazardous materials removed. You can bill the owner. They've obviously had to grow there for the last 4 years. I don't know how much you get for a plant or whatever, but I don't believe in his circumstance it would be a hard case, a hardship. Let's approve staff's recommendations to enforce today to be enforced this summer. The citizens of this county and of Murphy Creek in particular would like to see action and enforcement taken. Enforcement is really the issue. Thank you for your time.
Anyone else? You. Gentlemen.
Yeah, my name is Robert Krug. I live on the area of Borchanti. People have purchased property in the last couple years. I went and got the property profile to see what's going on. We have several grows in our area. We probably have now 600-700 plants in that area. I ain't lying to you. They're everywhere. It's very uncomfortable for me. I didn't move here for that. But I have to respect. There was a person, a gentleman, come up here talk about inspections. He lives on the same street as me. Didn't even know it. Didn't even know he was there. I believe in that. It should be billed to the growers. I wish you'd consider that. This year, we've had several people move in. The traffic, I can't even tell you. It's like a freeway there. I've had people on my property, which I've never had, with the gate closed, coming up there. So it hasn't been a comfortable situation. I do respect the growers, don't get me wrong. There is a place for it. We also have CCNRs in place, which I've had a meeting with her. She said it's not our responsibility. We have to get an attorney. You know, I ask you guys to consider the amount of grows allowed in an area. We have been infiltrated in our area. It's very uncomfortable. A lot of people can't show up. They're nervous about repercussions, so I'm here because they don't want to speak up. You know, it's a very uncomfortable situation for both of us, all of us. You know, I just wish you consider everything. Where do our rights come in? Where do their rights come in? But the amount of grows in an area, I think, needs to be considered or limited. You know, there's where do our rights come in? The property, the people, for everybody. The traffic, like I said, generator running. I couldn't do anything about it. Her hands are tied, just like she said. I went there. She says, we're not going to go out anymore because we've had guns pulled on us. So we talked to our attorneys. We're not going. It's too, you know, it's too dangerous for us. So all things being considered, I just wish you consider everybody's point of it. Consider some CCNRs that are in place. How many grows are allowed in a neighborhood, in a rural neighborhood? We have retirees. We have people working that can't be here. We have quite a great area. You know, and I appreciate your time.
So anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
Hello. Thanks for listening to us. My name is Michael Smith. I'm a homeowner in Williams, and I'm also a member of the Community Advisory Committee there. It's what we have there is a town council / community advisory committee, so we have two roles there. We do advise the county, and we also act as a town council to bring together community meetings to discuss issues that affect us. And that's the reason why we're petitioning you to accept Article 12, Article 20, and Article 69.5, the Williams area overlay. I would like to echo the six people in front of me who requested that you separate out those articles from all the other articles you're considering, because we feel it's a separate issue. So what those articles allow us to do when we receive a notification of the applications that are given to the county, it allows us to review them and also communicate with our community what is being planned or what is being proposed. And that allows us as a community to hash it out, to talk about it, to be able to give feedback to the county, but also in often situations to resolve conflict. So in the two situations that were brought up today about one large rec grow that has 14 greenhouses running fans 24 hours a day for the last 6 months, because of our town meetings, we've been able to bring those parties together to talk it out more. And what has also happened in our town is that people are resorting to litigation because we don't have an opportunity for people to talk things out before they already put in the fans or they already do the berm removals or all the problems that they create. So people are having to resort to litigation. And I personally would prefer that people get an opportunity to talk things out person to person. So that's the reason why we're requesting that you give us these applications. And I just want to be brief. I want to thank you for your time and, again, request that you can separate out those articles. Thanks a lot.
So anyone else? We'll bring it these two.
My name's Jared. I've lived here since 1983. And I love this place. This is my home, and always will be. Some things we forget. And right now, I feel like in our country, we're forgetting our responsibility to put community first, our citizens first, our land, our environment, our ecosystem, our water, and what that really means to life. And we're handing it over to people because they tell us to. They tell us this is what we should do. We should just fall in line. And it's sad because we often don't ask ourselves why. Why should we fall in line? What's good about it for us? Our community, our culture, our home, our veterans, our moms or dads. I mean, everyone that's in nursing homes, that's on countless numbers of pills. I mean, whatever it is, we're forgetting to put our community first. And for the first time in so many years, we're actually considering cannabis as medicine. For the masses that can cure so many different diseases. And we have to remember that all these pharmaceuticals that we're putting people on, the first pill is for the problem. The second pill is for the problem and the problem the first pill created. And it's redundant. It goes down a line. And then you just have people with liver failure at 14 or cancer because of all these different medications or whatever it may be. We don't consider that maybe we're overdosing our generation to come. And what will that look like? And what's the face of greed look like? Because I don't see giving our land and our water and our environment and our culture and our home to outsiders to rape and pillage for the name of money as a good benefit to our community. It does no good for our neighbor. It does no good for the man that's dying with cancer that can't find a grower anywhere. He can't even find a dispensary to buy it in. I mean, what good does it do? I mean, is the 25% or whatever profit really worth that? This is our responsibility to our elders, to our generation that is and is to come still. And we're looking at it so carelessly because people are telling us what to do. And I just ask you guys to consider what our responsibilities are and what our roles to our culture and our environment truly are. And what our role to the poor really looks like. And what can we give back? I mean, people have been growing for so many years, and if they're doing it right, they're doing it for the right reasons, and there was nothing wrong with the system in the first place, maybe you should have stayed with a system that worked, that helped people, but now we're looking at blocking it all off and giving it all away for the name of money. And I ask, what good does it do for our community when we have the most growers here, the most production comes out of here, and we're the tip of the Emerald Triangle? I mean, we could cure so many problems and bring so much money into this community, but we're not looking at the problem the right way. We're just falling in line. I think we need to set up trading posts and look out for the small OMP farmers. Because right now, I have over 50 pounds that have been tested that I can't move into the stores no more because they said my tests were no good. I did full spectrum, as much as I could spend on the test to get it, and then they changed the rules. And now it's in a system, and they're tracking me on it, and I can't sell it, so I sit on it, and I wait for the day that they show up at my house and break down my door and ask me where it is. But they give me no outlet. They give me no future. They give us very little hope, and they're taking everything away in the name of greed.
I know you missed the earlier part, but I think we're almost done. Anyone else want to speak? Yeah, go ahead. You gotta wait till you get to the mic so we can hear you.
My name's Lynette Gaines. I'm from Murphy.
Lynette, what was your last name?
Lynette Gaines.
Gaines.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm 58 years old. I was born and raised here in Grants Pass, and I've seen quite a bit. I used to see 5-acre groves out in Missouri Flats, out at Tequila. So it's been around forever, but I would like to see more enforcement, positive enforcement, but something out there. I want to say ditto for what Mr. Thomason said this morning and for Riversong and what you said when you came back after lunch. Please. The heroin problem here in Grants Pass has just gone beyond. Thank you.
Anyone else? Going once? Twice? Going back to the board for deliberation and further action. So we've got some options before us. I want to say thank you for all the testimony here today. We've got about four pages of testimony so far that I was taking notes on just briefly. I think just to kind of recap, there's been some succinct points about ways we could have done this better, but I think just getting an opportunity to hear from the public was a really, really good thing. And one of the issues having to do with so many different topics kind of intertwined in this text amendment, you start with an onion is a terrible analogy, but it just keeps going after thing after thing after thing. And I think that was, it's not easy to orchestrate one of these processes. That was another reason I think Ms. Schmelzer decided to just kind of put stuff out there. And as it got weeded through the process, well, then you'd kind of refine yourself with maybe a decent product at the end of the day. I really liked Ms. Gaines' positive enforcement element. You know, I don't think that this board is kind of new to this issue, but the previous board took an action to change the code through a text amendment and codified an ordinance to increase the growing opportunities in our county. I'm not so sure if I've heard of another county in the state who's actually done that. We provided agriculture as a commodity that can be grown, previously was restricted, in community industrial and industrial zone properties within Josephine County. We have a lot of industrial land that, because of the timber industry not being what it is now, from what it used to be, it's sitting fallow that should be utilized and could be. And to kind of mitigate the challenges between neighbors and that use, that's what land use is kind of all about. It does either penalize or reward 95% of the problem or people because of 5% of the problem. That's just the way that the cookie crumbles. I mean, that's kind of why you have land use regulation in the first place. It's not because everybody was doing it fine. It's because some people weren't doing it right. And so for good or bad, that's the system that we've inherited. I do think that if we move this forward, that it's a good idea to separate out some of these issues that are obviously not connected. I think the Williams CAC is the obvious one for me that doesn't necessarily have specific instances of where it deals with the cannabis industry, but indirectly has a real positive potential there. I like the idea of setting up a cannabis committee. I was reluctant to that at first because, frankly, we all are in this community. We have connections, but I think people really feel that there would be buy-in from a broad spectrum of the community if it was presented to a small group of people, and you could refine a proposed policy and it be brought back to the Rural Planning Commission or the board through that avenue. I think that's real positive. The hearings officer element is separate from this. That was a charge to Ms. Schmelzer from the previous board. Frankly, the board being layman, basically, as far as land use is concerned, is not, in my opinion, an appropriate body to be hearing some of these land use cases. The one that comes to mind was an aggregate operation that was so intense, and we, as taxpayers, incurred some costs because of not the best process of hearing that land use case. And so that's why I'm looking for, you know, a hearings officer, somebody who's trained in that avenue to better serve both the public and the applicant in facilitating that process. I have some questions, I think, for Ms. Schmelzer when I get all done about, like, the land use, the resource lands, and the fence setback. That was something we heard a number of times that really needs to be addressed. And just before you get up and clarify, I think what you meant was there's like a setback requirement on the public thoroughfare side that sometimes is not right on the property line. And if it isn't that, if it's on like the other neighboring parcels, that for me, it needs to be on the line. That is it's setting up a misnomer that there's a line where there isn't a line. Neighbors could get the false impression and actually the legal impression that they have access to that property even though it isn't theirs. And once they establish that use, you have a real tough time of enforcing them off of it. And so that's an issue. I think a reasonable setback requirement, regardless of the zone, not necessarily from the property line, but from people's residences. Not everybody feels the way that one woman who thought it was a fragrant smell. More often than not, I think the things that I get from people, complaints, and there have been numerous ones, are that it smells like a skunk or something like that. And some people might like that smell, but not everybody does. And they should have an opportunity to kind of get some reprieve in the summer months when people want to open their windows in the evenings, and that's really challenging to do. If you live in Williams or the Tequilma area, you're probably not going to be able to escape it by just closing your windows or having a setback on your neighbor's property. I think that there needs to be some real specific delineation between the medical regulations, the recreational, and the commercial. The recreational and the commercial kind of seems like they maybe overlap a little bit more. It all comes down to, I think Lavender said, people not following the code right now are not likely to follow a new code. And I think that really hits the heart of it as far as we need to do adequate enforcement of the current code we have. We have the capacity on the board to take those people to court who have been violating it. And it isn't, in my opinion, that you give them all of this time to comply when there's health and safety issues at hand. I know that the previous board and the board before that and the board before that, I've been here for four boards, have said health and safety are a number one. Expedite that process to the board through legal counsel. I'm sorry if people are in a bad situation and they don't have too many alternatives as far as a home is concerned, but there's a lot of liability that I feel at the county that if we're aware of a situation that has a health and safety violation, if we don't do something about it, I'm not so sure that they're better off, you know, in another situation. And my parents and I talk constantly about the homeless and the drug issue here. I don't know, I mean, people talking about moving from Colorado. If you have the capacity to move here from Colorado, you have the capacity to move to San Diego. I mean, I would be down someplace warm. I don't know, that's just me. If I were in a tough situation, it's not a back and forth, and I do appreciate those comments, but man, this is not the most hospitable place to be homeless. There are a lot of generous people who will do a lot of stuff to help you out, but at the same time, if that isn't there, this is not a good place to be homeless, in my opinion. But housing is an issue, and I kind of feel like, while we were going through all this, I'm trying to think about ways to take what's being presented and refine it into a policy that makes sense and kind of helps solve more problems than it creates by doing it. When you allow recreational grow, which is supposed to be under the law, the one where you can make money, even though I know people do under the medical, it feels to me like you have an indirect consequence is you're driving up the cost. cost of residential property if you're allowing that to take place there. And that's an unforeseen consequence of that. And I'm all for private property rights. But then you got to balance that with housing issue, and you're pushing a lot of people who can't afford that because maybe they don't want to grow. But the guy next to him does, and so he's generating some resource revenue, and it's a problem. It's not easy. That's why not everybody wants to do this job. But we got to figure out a way to kind of, like I said, make it better than make it worse. People doing the right thing is one of the last things I'll say is just, if anything that I'm going to endorse shouldn't negatively impact people who are doing the right thing for the right reasons. That's not why we're doing what we're doing, in my opinion. And so if it refines everybody to a setback when they're growing of 30 feet, I think, you know, if some people aren't compliant with that and they need to be, well, then everybody's going to need to try to play by those rules. There are rules when you own property and when you're trying to do something, and that's just kind of the lay of the land. If you don't like those rules, you can do it a different way. Go to a county that doesn't have those. You know, that's a lot of people express today that they moved here because of X, Y, or Z. Well, that's what makes this nation great, is all 50 states are different. All 36 counties in this state are different. And you may not like it, but you can either run for office, you can refer this to the voters, or these are the rules, for good or bad. And I actually think that there's probably a need for some of these things because there isn't real clarity within the population of Josephine County to refer some of those to the electorate. Let's say it's a decision above my pay grade. I'm happy to do that, that they should decide. And then there isn't, you know, then I don't have a choice but to say, well, doggone it, that's how everybody felt, or the majority of the people felt, and that's what we're going to do here in Josephine County. So I think some of these things didn't seem all that contentious. I'd like to break those out and kind of address them. The ones that are contentious, still want to deal with them. We don't get the job of just the easy stuff. Break it out, send it to the voters as soon as possible. I proposed to the board at a meeting last week of sending a non-binding question to the voters. Now, that wouldn't be, like I said, non-binding, but it would give the Board of Commissioners some clarity about which direction is kind of threading the needle, and I hope that we kind of take that up. Since I've been on the board and other members have suggested questions, we've referred 6 non-binding questions to the electorate since I've been in office. It's more than any other county I've ever heard of, and in the history of Josephine County, it had only been done once before. I'm really interested in hearing what people have to say about issues that sometimes you can't get a whole lot of clarity on just having this one hearing or 4. That is one thing I wanted to mention, is that the board as a whole didn't necessarily endorse those 4 town halls. We never came to a consensus. That was the charge of one commissioner who went out and thought it was a good idea. It takes a board to kind of endorse that as a plan, and not that it wasn't maybe had its merit, but I don't want people to walk away and think that that was something that the full board endorse. Both of us, Commissioner Heck and myself, were a little taken aback by that. So, Mr. Seligman, you've had your opportunity, and I tell you what, this isn't the time. So, there is no reason, Mr. Seligman. There is no reason.
You're not going to tell the truth when you speak. Commissioner Heck did endorse
them. Mark?
We're not there.
Mark?
Well, I'm just
Mr. Seligman. If you continue,
I'm done.
Thank you. Please be done.
Tell the truth. That's all I ask. You're not telling the truth, Dad.
Please.
Hey, guys.
Come on.
You already had your comments time.
Thank you very much. I don't think I interrupted anybody, right? So I don't understand how after 4 hours that has to come up. So please. Anything from you guys? Councilor Dion? Commissioner Dion.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what. First off, appreciate everybody that came today because, you know, you took time out of your day. Julie, I want to just thank you for all. You've done a ton of hard work on this thing, and this thing's probably kept you up more nights than I even care to talk about. So are we going to get everybody to agree with every aspect of these text amendments? Absolutely not. Just in talking to some of you during the break, is there any part of this that you would like that you would say, yeah, I can live with that? And there are those aspects of this text amendment, these text amendments that we can deal with. I suggest we get those wadded out and move them off to one side. We'll work on those, and then we'll work on some sort of consensus on the rest of them. But there has to be something done. Now, Mark, you say 95% of people are good and 5% are bad. Well, you know what? That 5% has to live next to 60% of this room. When I look at the compound problem, I don't know how many people said that their neighbors have raw sewage running into their yard and down their creek and so on and so on and so on. That's not acceptable living. And, you know, for the young lady in the back that said, you know, we could be homeless and so on and so on, I'm gonna tell you a little story that hit home with me. At the Association of Oregon Counties, I went to a dispensary because I was curious to see. I'd never been there. And the gentleman, the proprietor, went on to talk about the different grades of cannabis and so on and so forth. And we got all done. He said, do you have any questions? And I said, yes. I said, OLCC, if I'm a bartender and I serve somebody too much alcohol and they get in a wreck or hurt themselves or whatever, I lose my license and I get sued civilly. I says, where is your liability? And he says, how do you mean? And I says, I have a sheet metal shop. And if one of my guys decides to smoke a bowl on Friday night and then comes to work the following Wednesday and chops his finger off in the shear, we go out to the hospital. They can't put the finger on, so now he's permanently disabled 40% because he lost his trigger finger. And I ask, and I says, on top of that, they check him for blood because it is a workman's comp claim. And because he tests positive for cannabis, because he did that a week ago, guess what? Workman's comp, they say, I'm sorry, Mr. DeYoung, we are not going to cover this incident for you to get him fixed up today, and we are not going to cover him forever for his 40% disability. That man right there, because he decided to smoke a bowl on Friday night, he took away everything I owned and everything I've earned. And I have an issue with that. And the proprietor says, you know, I've never had anybody tell me that. I said, so there's some responsibility to the growers. There's responsibilities to the dealer. It's a legitimate business now. It's up to you to make it legitimate in everyone's eyes. There's got to be some ownership here of these complaints. And you say, just, oh, yeah, I don't care about the compounds and stuff. Well, I do care about the compounds because I live in Josephine County. I was born here. And, yeah, there's some clutter out there and so on and so forth, and I have some issues with car licensing and things of that sort. But I have a real issue with some of the pictures I've seen on that screen today, and people say, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, I do know what they're talking about because I wouldn't want that living next door to me. So I think the key that's been brought up over and over and over again is we have to be good neighbors. Now, I think definition of good neighbors probably is all over the map. Your definition of a good neighbor, you're a nice guy, and boy, I'm a good neighbor, but you know what, I don't like you. So we're not going to get into that. But I think, you know, there's got to be some rules, there's got to be some codes, there's got to be some things that need to be enforced in a civil society. Now, if we all want to live out there in the middle of nowhere, that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to live out there, but don't let your rights infringe on my rights. You know, I've heard people that build $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, or $600,000 homes. They moved here for the same reason, or maybe a different reason, than you moved here. You moved here because you could grow cannabis, and there was no property taxes. They moved here to enjoy Southern Oregon and the smell of fir trees instead of cannabis. So why don't we look at their property rights right along with your property rights to grow? So I have a real issue with this. It's going to take a while for it to sort out, but I'm going to go back to the National Hot Rod Association, who puts on drag racing. They have a lot of rules. And over the rules, you used to jump in a car and go down the quarter mile, and everybody had a great time. Until they started wrecking cars because they got too fast. Then they started putting in rules and more rules and more rules. Every one of those rules was written in somebody's blood. You want to take that away from their widow and their children and their orphan kids? It was written in their blood. They're still having people dying today, but I've seen some hellacious wrecks on the NHRA. At 300 and something miles an hour and wad that car into absolutely a ball, and the guy jumps out and goes, whoo, was that an e-ride? You know why? Because the rules were in place to keep him alive. The rules are going to come down the road, but I hope we can all get along and I've got 4.5 pages of notes here that I would like to digest because it's important to me what you folks say. And I'm not getting that by sitting in that building over there. I get it by sitting in this building here. And so I've got a lot of information here that, and it's all over the map. It's all over the map. But I think if we take what Julie's done, the hard work on the foundation, we can build this house on a real solid foundation. So I like the CAC out in Williams. I think that's a fantastic idea. Commissioner Morgan has said over and over on the trail that she would like to see a cannabis committee that we can get together and see if we can sort out maybe what some of the harder portions of this of these amendments and the rules going on. And this maybe we may add more rules to it. You don't know. If that's what people want, that's what we'll do. So I just appreciate everybody coming in because it's been a long deal. But I think it's absolutely necessary for Commissioner Morgan and I to hear from you rather than just hear the pass down stuff from the prior commission. We needed to hear it first. I wish they would have handled it before the end of the year, but I'm glad they didn't. I'm really glad they didn't because I think there's some real advantage to taking a step back and a deep breath and saying, you know, let's go at this thing and maybe with a new set of eyes and a new attitude and stuff. But you know what? I can guarantee you, every one of you in the room, you're not going to get everything you want. I don't know what to do about the generator out there by your place. I know what I'd do about it, but you know what? That's an issue. That's an issue. And so those are things, and this is testimony that we've got written down here. I know Commissioner Morgan's written a tremendous amount of notes herself. So we're not going to sweep this under the rug. We're going to get something going. I was hoping, and I'm sure Julie Smeltzer was hoping, that there would be something solid that you as a grower could take into the growing season. I don't know. I think we're kind of running out of time there. And you know, everybody's, wow, why do you want to rush this through? Julie was thinking of the grower. She's not looking at her. She's not thinking of herself here. She's thinking of the grower and saying, you know, I don't want you to get a bunch of stuff put in and then have the Board of County Commissioners say you got to tear it all out. So, and he had the deal about fence along the back of his property and he butts up against BLM land. That's a no-brainer to me, so we'll kick this around. I'll yield time to Commissioner Morgan because I'm sure she has something to say also. Thank you.
No, I have no thoughts. No, I'm just kidding. You know, one of the things that came to mind, when I was in undergrads, one of my favorite classes was sociology of deviance, and you know, for me to become a parole officer, that makes sense kind of thing. But the teacher at the time, the most egregious thing he could think of was his example was smoking marijuana, which is kind of funny now, 25 years later. So with that, though, if everybody in the crew is doing something, it's not deviant. It's when all of a sudden one person in that ring goes outside of what the rest of them are doing that now it's deviance. So here we are today, trying to figure out how do society's norms, when they start butting up against one person or two here or there that are a little different, how do we figure out what's normal, what's the norm versus what's deviant? And very much we need to find a way to acknowledge the law that says this is legal, acknowledge that there's medicinal versus recreational, acknowledge there's commercial versus non-commercial, and acknowledge property rights. So long as we also find that your property rights can infringe on my property rights. And we have to find that boundary where we're respecting each other and finding that that place that we can have peace between, hopefully. I mean, most everybody here is in a luckier spot than me. My next door neighbors, they turn on their kitchen light and my bedroom glows. I mean, that's what happens when you live in town, you know. So. Unlike going to my grandma's house where the crickets keep you up all night because you're not used to those sounds. And I know that I personally have heard, I didn't count. That's part of my issue. I don't have a spreadsheet because I didn't count every complaint that I personally received. But the lighting, and we had some good examples of what we can do with that, with finding a way to have the light glow down and not affect the night sky, not affect your neighbor's property. To me, that's decent. And when you go to Williams, that's the first place I could think of I could see the stars. Why would I want to take away from the ability to see the stars? And that's part of the beauty of living in a rural area. There are some other places that they're good for that as well, but we have to protect some of that stuff. So
But one of the bigger questions I have is with the fencing. It's my understanding the state is getting rid of the requirement to have fencing around marijuana groves. And so if there is a reduction in restriction from the state, then why are we going to increase and continue our regulation? So I just want to make sure that gets clarified before we address that, is that if they're loosening their regulations, I don't want us making ours more stringent necessarily than what the state is requiring. You know, it is a hard thing to know what to do, especially when I don't think anybody wants to be the bad parent. They want to be the fun parent. They want to be the ones known for having the fun events with the kids versus the one that's a disciplinarian. But sometimes those boundaries are what make a kid feel safe, is because you know what the rules are. My expectation is that the rules make sense, they're fair and applicable, and they're not just for one person here or one person there, that everybody knows what the guidelines are, and so that we can all plan and live by those. So I think the enforcement side of it, we might need to also pull out as far as looking at pieces of it, but regulation is necessary, but we need to be intentional with it and take it one piece at a time. But there has to be an enforcement piece with that if you have regulation. Otherwise, what's the point of wasting the time? The Williams CAC, I would be curious of why the other nine went away and if the other ones are necessary. But it's also not officially a town council. As much as it is an advisory board to us, and it's not elected versus appointed, and it's not a township, or it's not an incorporated city. So we have to be careful that the, you know, but let's pull that out. Go hold a meeting in Williams where everybody who lives in Williams can show up and be a part of the conversation and address that regulation out there and get some feedback out there where it's in the middle of the community where it's affecting. And then perchance we can look at, is this a model we want to continue in every one of our rural neighborhoods, that Wolf Creek, Sunny Valley, Hugo, Merlin, Kirby, Tipkill, O'Brien, that each, you know, how extensive do these need to be? Where's the other nine? And do they each all have equally access to have their testimony heard as well? Because never do I want an advisory committee to prohibit a citizen from being able to have access to the Board of Commission. And so it's great to have a voice, but it doesn't replace a citizen's right to access their elected officials. So anyhow, I'm not sure what our next steps are. There is definitely a lot to process, but it wasn't. What I appreciate about this one is I had folks come up to me after the town halls, and they said, I didn't feel safe saying the concerns that I had, because I think there was an element of fear that we were going to so regulate that the cannabis industry would be stopped. And so there was a lot of intimidation towards some folks, even, and fear drives that. It's kind of one of those things. So some people didn't feel safe expressing their concerns, even if they didn't have issues with cannabis. They said, but wait a second, this is a legitimate issue. Absolutely, it is, but they have to feel safe to say it. Today, I heard a better balance, and I was pleased with that. And I really appreciate that everybody respectfully listened to everybody else and gave differing viewpoints an equal share. Anyhow, I'll be quiet now.
No, I think those were all good comments. I think moving this forward is probably in the best purview of the board. There's been a lot of work done, thanks, Ms. Schmelzer, to you and your office. But really, it needs to be assigned to both Ms. Schmelzer and legal counsel to probably break it up into the subject matters and providing those as recommended ordinances to be moved forward. So I had asked about a date that we would be available. We're not available. I think you have a conflict next Monday in the morning. Otherwise, we typically hold land use issues on a Monday, but it's February is a really tough month. And so
well, I have a question here. It says board may consider and grant continuances or to keep the record open whenever it finds these procedures are needed or helpful to permit a full and fair hearing, as well as to conclude action on the request, including appeals. within the statutory time limit on land use decisions. What is that time limit? I mean, is this 90 days or?
We don't have one on this. We haven't started that process. Statutory time limits would be assigned to the board when there's an application pending and we need to do action, kind of like the last one.
All right, we're not holding anybody up.
Oh, there's nobody. No. I mean, ideally, I think we were looking to try to get this done before the growth season, but it is what it is, and we, you know, move some stuff forward and some stuff maybe might take longer.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would love to see something go in before the growth season, but you know what? I'd rather do it right. I think I'd rather take a step back and you know, sit down with Julie and sit down with the committees and various other things. And I think we can come up with a product that everybody in the room is, so that if we had another hearing like this, we have 10 people, you know, rather than 200. You know, I think that the fact that there was a lot of people showed up here today, that means there's a lot of interest in it, which in my mind means we need to take a step back and take a deep breath and see if we can come up with not necessarily a better product, but one that's more applicable in the various areas that it's going to cover. Because we kind of shotgunned the whole thing there, and I think there are things that everybody can agree on, or almost everybody can. You're not going to get everybody, but you know, just for instance, like the compound issue. You know, to me that's big. So what are we going to do about that? You know, how are we going to address that?
Well, and on that note, you know, it was just December 2nd that 36 people died in a house fire in Oakland that was essentially a city compound where it was providing shelter for homeless, but it wasn't up to code, and there was a fire and they couldn't get out. And so there's a reason for those regulations. So I've spent a lot of my career trying to find people housing and to help with that, and that is something I take very seriously, but I want them to be safe. I'm all for trying to change state regulation to allow tiny homes, alternative types homes, but they have to have sewer, they have to have water, and they have to have proper electrical, so they're not going to die in the middle of the night. Let's do it right and find a way to open up options, but not to the point that you're infringing on your neighbor's place as well. If you guys need, I can try to get my appointment changed on Monday, because the problem is the following two Mondays we're not here either.
Right.
And
I don't believe staff, legal counsel, is going to be able to get us a draft of the ordinances anyway by next Monday. So maybe some of them. But if you were available, we could at least try to tackle them. We can discuss this stuff administratively, but not policy-wise outside a hearing. So I would like to continue this, whatever we choose to do, to when we revisit the issue.
Do you need a motion for that, Chairman?
Well, I think we need to discuss it. I don't know. Are you ready for?
I would like to, between now and Monday, if we can peel out the things that we.
Yeah, I was going to leave it up to legal and planning staff to figure out the number. Wally and I had a quick conversation. He thinks that there's a number of different issues that could be peeled off and
segregated,
addressed
up separately
under the code.
I'd be interested in that, so we're not looking at all of them at the same time.
But I think we could try to figure out what we can see next Monday and take it up. I'd at least like to see a list of what all the issues we could are addressing. Maybe even put a prioritization and say, you know, these couple can go first and then after that.
So you only do mornings, or can you do afternoon on the day?
So, I mean, I can block out all days.
I'll see if I can get what I can do with my appointment.
Would it be better in?
I can either make it a morning or afternoon appointment. I just have to try to.
Julie Schmelzer, Community Development Director. I just wanted an opportunity to answer some of the questions that came up. We typically allow staff time to do that,
sure.
So some clarifications.
Absolutely.
So I went through and I made some quick notes on some of the questions or things that I felt should be clarified. One is, somebody had mentioned a water impound. Nothing in there talks about water impound. What it does do is it talks about impervious surface ratio limitations to minimize runoff. Okay, so I want to clarify there's no water impound language in there. There was a comment about the fences, the county requiring fences. The county does not require fences. What we say is, if someone wants a fence or if they're required to have a fence, then we're laying out rules that they would have to follow. But we do not mandate fencing in the county. As far as the compounds go, I realize some people like the idea of having them, but just a reminder, and for those that don't know, it's a state rule that you can only have one camper per property. So when you have a compound, it's a violation of state code, and counties are the arm of the state, so it comes up, it falls on the county to then enforce that state code. So we really don't have any leeway to allow more than one camper. That's why the compounds are a violation. There was comment about the fence being 30 feet back, 30-foot setback. I just want everyone to understand that that's a rule that's been on the books since the early 1970s. We're not proposing any change to that today. What we are doing is bringing it to your attention that there's a rule out there, and that's why, you know, some people say, why the 30-foot setback for a plant? And it's to explain, well, we do have other 30-foot setbacks out there that we use. A lot of times what you'll see when there's a setback for a solid fence, it's to make sure that the fence can be maintained on both sides. If somebody doesn't want to have a fence that's set off a property line, that's when they look at an open fence, like a split rail fence or a chain link fence. Those typically are on a property line when you're looking at land use planning and zoning. So just clarify that. There was a comment that we would requiring people to hire engineers for odor mitigation. That is not true. If you look at the codes, it does allow for us to accept manufacturing specifications, and that's spelled out in those draft rules before you. There was a comment about odor and how a county cannot regulate odor associated with marijuana. That is not true. The state laws were amended in February of 2016 to allow counties in the agricultural areas to now be able to address odor and noise in those EFUs. So, yes, that was, as we explained earlier, that was previously limited, that we could not through the right to farm law, but that was changed in February of 2016. There was talk about a cannabis committee. The previous board did talk about a cannabis committee, and it was decided to refer that over to the city and the county. City of Grants Pass and the county are putting together a joint economic development strategic plan, and the previous board decided when they talked about a cannabis committee was to recommend that be a subcommittee of that economic development strategic plan committee.
I wholeheartedly disagree.
I'm just saying that's what they had decided at that time. So
I don't want it to get mired down in economic development.
Yeah. There was the comment that we're complaint-driven now, but if we get this enforcement ability, we're not going to be complaint-driven. We've been complaint-driven since we've started in 1973. I don't see where all once we have enforcement ability that would change. There's just not the workload to go out. there's just not the staff to go out and start looking for violations. Well, so.
And that question came up, you know, I think one of the statistics thrown out there was that 45 of the complaints were by one person. Does that count as 45 complaints or one complaint?
Okay, first of all, that's not true. I heard that as well, okay, but yeah, that is not true. I know there was also the comment that there were six complaints 4 years ago, and that's all that was on the books. That is not true as well. I actually do have the numbers before us, so I'll go through those real quick. In 2007, there were 285 open cases. In 2008, 131. 2009, there were 76. 2010, there were 75. 2011, there were 81. 2012, 70. 2013, there were 82. In 14, there were 58. In 15, there were 82. In 2016, we've had 224 open cases. And we have an additional 328 that we have not been able to open the file on yet. So in all, there are 585 opened files, 36% of them just since August 4th of this year. So I don't know where those numbers would have come from that were mentioned. I do have that here in case anybody would like a copy of that. There's also the comment that with odor that we would not be requiring people to mitigate the fragrance just on RR5 over 2.5. Just a comment that the only place we would be requiring the odor to be mitigated in the RR5 over 2.5 acres is if it's an indoor grow, not an outdoor grow.
Does greenhouse count as indoor?
Yes. It talks about the fact that we are grandfathered in medical. Be advised, when you look at those rules, proposed rules, sometimes the OLCC is grandfathered as well. In particular, if they have their license by, it says, if they have their license by October 1st of 2016, they are grandfathered as well. So it's not grandfathering just the medical marijuana. There's a comment that there are no ordinances in Williams. That is not true. Williams is subject to county zoning rules. So the rules that are in place in Merlin are the same rules that are in place in Williams. There's a comment that at the town hall, a commissioner said that they would not be looking at RR5. I was at the town hall meetings. I don't remember that. What I do recall is the commissioner actually making available copies of the ordinance, the resolution, which gave me the directive to look at RR5. So that was...
Just rural residentially zoned properties, not just RR5.
Right. Correct.
All rural.
There was a comment about having a grace period. Originally, when... as a policy in the first draft when we brought to the Plan Commission, there was a grace period in there that regardless of when the rules were adopted, we would want to see a grace period until mid-May for them to comply. We still will give people a grace period. We had to take that out because obviously we won't even have an effective date. Probably the rules won't even be effective by that date now, but there still will be time to comply in there. We just have to find out what that reasonable time period is, and it all depends on when the rules actually become effective. There was a comment about the charcoal filters, 100-pound filter being about $5,000. And the comment that we didn't think that was thought out well enough. What we did is we actually went off of a county that has an ordinance that they have that they consider quite successful, and we followed the same. It's written almost verbatim. And the other thing is what we did for the Plan Commission, and I don't have it here for you today, but with the Plan Commission, one of the commissioners had actually asked in advance for copies of specs and prices on what these type of fans cost, and they range from a couple hundred up to a couple thousand dollars, so it all depends what somebody wants to put in their greenhouse or in their indoor grow area.
Please, this...
Again, the comment on the hearings officer, that is, again, a completely separate proposal that has not even been submitted to DLCD yet for a public hearing before you. We wanted to get through these before we moved on to that, but that is a completely separate issue and proposal, and it has nothing to do with the marijuana industry or the proposed text amendments before you. And the other one was just a comment on the CAC, why we do not have the other CACs. I can only tell you what I was told. I think some of them just dissolved after time. When I came, I thought there were two, and I actually reached out to the other CAC, and she said, you know, we didn't renew our certification. And I asked her why, and she said, well, your department has not been working with us. And I asked around and I asked staff, and they said, yeah, we have not done well with the CACs. Since I've been here, first of all, I take a different approach to planning. I'm a big advocate for community planning and working individually with towns or villages if you can. So I reached out to the Williams CAC, and it's been a really good experience, but what I found is I don't think that happened in the past. So that could be why they went away. I'm told in particular why this one didn't renew their membership, or I'm sorry, their certification, is because they just didn't feel there was a good working relationship. I am hoping that we can repair that damage and for the other communities to see there is value in working together and that we will work together with them, but that's going to take some time. And I'd like to start with the Williams CAC and let people see that we are committed to actually having that relationship with them again to address planning issues. And that's it as far as the notes that I took, unless you have other questions.
I'd be interested, Julie, in getting into the CACs, what their authority is and how it's laid out, because I think I caught that the CAC in Williams wants to look at all applications for permits in Williams within their district and then pass judgment on them. And I don't know whether it's, gee, we don't want that guy in here or whatever. I'd like to see maybe their criteria is what they're going to screen these with. Or is it just, we have concerns. These are our concerns. If they're going to help us out by saying, these are the concerns we see with this company, we are going to vet them and then bring that to the board or bring that to you. I don't think I want to extend them the authority to say who can and can't move into their valley.
The way it's written, the intention and the way it is written is that they are advisory, so they can just bring forward comments or thoughts they have on the application. Okay. They have no final say on that application. They are purely an advisory committee to the planning department.
Okay, thank you.
I forgot earlier, I really liked the recommendation to define fences.
So do I.
And so if we're not requiring one beyond what the state is requiring, just simply defining that, I liked that. I don't think I heard it today, but it was in your report as far as anything over 7 foot requires engineering. Therefore, why are we requiring 8 foot fences, and having them at that level that they can?
Sure. Let me just answer that address that real quick, Commissioner. So the OLCC came out with this rule that said anything over eight, or it said you had, if you were required to have a fence, it had to be 8 foot in height. There wasn't coordination with other agencies, probably to the degree that it should have been when those rules were crafted, because there's another part of the state that creates the state building safety code, and that one says any fence over 7 feet requires engineering. So that's a state code. But yeah, OLCC said we're going to look at, you need a fence at least 8 foot high, not realizing that there was a building safety code that said, hey, we look at fences over 7 feet. It would have been nice if they would have been consistent, because it did cause a lot of confusion out there in the public, where people would say, hey, I'm required to have a fence that's 8 foot high, I don't need a permit. And we'd come back and say, well, state code actually, different part of the state code says once it's 7 feet, you actually need a permit and you have to have engineered drawings.
That hasn't been changed yet?
The 7 foot?
Or the state fence regulations.
So the state, they just gave the opportunity to have chain link fences or open fences. One thing that's misconstrued too is that the state doesn't always require a, when I say state, I'm talking OLCC, they don't always require a fence. It's for security purposes. So sometimes they can give a waiver to that depending on the amount of vegetation out there or other security measures that you may have in place. So when people say, oh, we're required to have a fence, that was a decision made by OLCC based on that license.
Does OHA require one at all?
I'd have to look and see if they do or not, to be honest with you. I did not find it in their rules. People have told me it's in the rules, but I have not found that in the OHA rules.
Didn't Representative Wilson, when I talked to him the other day before they left for session, he said that there's going to be new rules coming down from the state. They're trying to sort this thing out because they know they pulled the trigger faster than they should have. And fences was one of the things that he indicated that they were going to be looking at quite heavily. So because just for the reasons you just expressed, no consistency between all of it. And then I really get concerned when an engineer is required to engineer a fence.
I would just offer a word of caution to looking for the state to fix a local issue, especially a local rural issue, that they've had two sessions to figure out some of these things. And I would say they don't always do a very good job of reaching a workable consensus before the end of the session.
And then the last thing is, from my standpoint, Cannabis Advisory Committee or board, whatever it is, I'd like that to be our advisory board. The city's regulations are going to be different. Their stipulations, their rules are a separate body entity. We're looking at rural cooperation. They're looking at urban with a tenth of an acre lot, where they have just different guidelines, different goals. So I think that from my standpoint, I would find just the same as we have a mining advisory board and a mental health advisory board and all these other advisory boards, that it would be beneficial for us to have a cannabis advisory board. And that was something that I would find valuable.
There was a lot of support for that early on. There were people that actually had given provided their name that wanted to sit on there. There's actually the draft language already out there, should the Board of Commissioners decide to pursue that. So there has been interest.
Yeah, I'd love to weigh in on what I'd like to make sure is included in on that.
So I think we've heard a lot today, and I think we could probably hold this hearing in recess until February 6th, right here in the Ann Basker at 9 a.m. That's going to be my proposal to the board. And then also the charge of taking the proposed text amendment, dividing it up into subject matter elements, providing those to the board in draft ordinance form, and then at that point we could go specifically through each one and say, you know, move this one forward, this one needs more time, or what have you. So I think that's probably the best way to move forward in this hearing process. So if that's amenable, the board is going to be in recess on this issue until February 6th, 2017, and we will convene here at the Ann Basker at 9 a.m. No objection. We're in recess. Thank you so much. One thing I wanted to recommend is people not speaking to the Board of Commissioners on a pending land use issue. I noticed people before the lunch break that they were coming up here and hopefully not discussing this issue.